You're listening to Radio IV and Sounds Around Town. This is Al Loya. And in the studio today, I got Moon DC, who's going to be helping me interview Doc Pete of Kimberly Records. Now I think they changed their name, and they go by Kimberly. What's that, Doc?
Kimberly Media,
that's right.
Under Peter's Production.
So we'll be talking to Doc Pete, and we got Moon DC in the house. Going to be helping me do that. So stay tuned.
Hello. Please let me speak to you.
I just need a minute of your time. I'm not going to talk no trash.
Hello.
Speak through me to you.
Has something good for you to do.
And that's a guarantee.
I think
you know, you just have to have one.
You can proclaim your boss
or another. Either Satan, the devil, or the Lord Jesus Christ. It's no gray zone.
Of so salvation, Lord.
No matter how good you think you are,
you
belief
that God raised Jesus.
Yes, you were born in sin.
Confession that He's your Lord.
And Jesus died for you.
Believe that.
Then He was raised from dead.
Confess that Jesus is your Lord. Romans 10:9. If you
confess He is your Lord.
Love.
Can you confess that
breaks
you
all chains out and in?
Might be fought a little bit short because of those chains you got on you. That's right. You might not be locked up in the joint.
We have the grip of
but you got
sin.
Chains on you because of the grip of that sin that you were born with.
Believe in my heart. Belief that God raised Jesus from the dead. Believe the Father loved us so much that He gave
then God raised Him from there.
Jesus Christ, whosoever should believe shall not perish.
And He is coming back for those who believe.
Lord, now believe in your heart that God raised Him from there.
Thank you. died for you.
And confess with your mouth that Jesus the Lord, the Father, did allow his only begotten Son to come to death, which is a love thing boundless. All you have to do is confess with your mouth that Jesus your Lord, raised him from there. Your heart that God raised Jesus from the dead because he died for your sins.
Oh, yes, he died for you. So loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, such that whosoever should believe shall not perish, but shall have everlasting life.
This is Move DC. So, Doc, what was the name of that particular track?
Oh, man, that was one called It Seems So Good, But It Can't Be True. And that was really inspired by actually a jazz tune I learned in St. Louis, Missouri, under Willie Akins, who was my, I guess I could say, instructor. He was the guru of jazz at that time. And he'd write songs out actually literally on a piece of paper. We didn't have the real book that they have today. And this was something written by Lee Morgan, based on a little thing entitled Mr. Kenyatta. And you can hear the song. It starts off Latin and then goes to a straight-ahead bridge. I'm sure you'll really like it, and you'll continue to like it as you hear it. But we put some gospel lyrics to it, and what we did, we invented a new genre called GAS, which is really gospel music. Gospel lyric with jazz music. And, of course, you know, when you have new things that I'm sure you can probably attest to, sometimes it's a little hard to sell. But I know we did right with respect to what we think our particular ministry is. This was our first venture into making music a ministry, meaning something that we do for the Lord.
So, Doc, why don't you tell us who influenced you the most?
Who influenced me the most was my daddy. And I tell you, I haven't met a man as good since he's been on this earth. I had him for 84 years. My mother's real good, too. But my dad gave me my first horn when I was about 6. We just celebrated 50 years of playing saxophone. And it was just a beautiful thing. Old beat-up horn that he had, he made it sound good. But it was a little bit more difficult for me. It took about 12 more years for us to be able to afford, or me be able to afford, my own horn. But he gave me my first start in playing farming. He had sat in with Count Basie's band. He had some of his favorite tunes called The Gypsy and some of the others that he really loved. Waterboy, I never will forget. I could just think about it yesterday, him singing some of these songs you guys probably never have heard, but were old standards back in the day.
Hey, Doc, I got a question for you. Yes, let's go back and let people know exactly who you are and what you have done.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I have done nothing on my own. Let me just say that. I've kind of stumbled into things, but purely with the Lord's help, and I should say with the Holy Spirit's help, we basically were the first ones to record rap for women in the state of Texas with Lady P. I ran into her at a club called Blue back in the day, and she was saying so much sense, made so much sense. And this was before Public Enemy and before some of the more positive rap groups that came out. And we actually had sent something up to New York for people to hear. We think we probably could have inspired Public Enemy.
What year was that, Doc?
Oh, I'm going to say, man, you're going to hurt me there. I'm going to say 82, 83.
I was still around, Doc, so yeah, you know.
Yeah, 82, 83, I hope so.
Rather youngster, but yes, yeah, I was there.
We had a ball, and I ran into Lady P, and I certainly want that to maybe be the next track that we put on here. We certainly can bring Divinely in, and hopefully we'll be able to play it. But really, she was slamming with respect to just telling about South Africa and the ANC and stuff. Really, I wasn't really keeping up with as much. Nelson Mandela wasn't even out of
prison
yet. Penitentiary for something he didn't do. I mean, for some, because he was obviously in prison for the wrong thing.
Well, you know what, Doc?
Yes, sir.
I've got a record, a 45-inch record in my hand right now from Kimberly Records. Can you talk a little bit about how I got this in my hand from Rio Sunset?
Oh, man, we had a ball with that. That was actually the first thing we did in Houston, Texas. We recorded over a little studio over on Richmond right before you get to Montrose. It's a very good Mexican restaurant. You can play volleyball outside. I told the people there.
So, Doc, was that a restaurant and a recording studio?
No. At that time, it was purely recording studio. They converted it to a restaurant.
I see.
But we had a good time there. I think it was probably 8 tracks, if I'm not mistaken. We had Charles Spooky Dancy actually on bass and keyboards, Walter Joseph on drums. Yes, the late Walter Joseph. Both of those guys have passed on. And also Keith Borders, who was playing with me at Pizzazz Lounge under the production of Tully Evans, which was really some of the stuff we did for Live at Pizzazz, Jazz at Pizzazz, I should say, which lasted for years, 4 or 5 years over there under Charles Bush's club called Pizzazz.
Who, as far as was doing all the writing for the music?
Well, actually, we had songs that we had had years ago. That's my song, Rio Sunset, something that just kind of came to me, something I could actually play on piano, with my piano chops are very minimal, to say the least. But I had always heard about Dizzy Gillespie getting on, actually having a melody, sort of like the root of what I was trying to get at and hearing you all's interview. How do you actually do this music? A melody comes to mind, and then you put chords around it. You can actually figure the chords around. And this was something pretty simple. It wasn't as complicated as some of the jazz tunes I play. But after going to Rio de Janeiro, man, I had to write something about that.
Heavily influenced.
The girls, the drums, they were all over the place. You know, just straight
just
up on the
shaking what
the
they got.
Man, let me tell you something. It is in their blood. I guarantee it. You go to Rio, you go to Brazil right now, you're going to hear the drum everywhere.
Muy caliente.
Muy caliente. And I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, you can't suppress. They can't suppress it. It's like, even though the poverty is so great and there's a lot of oppression, you know, especially less money, you know, say like Reverend Ike said, it's not money that's the root of all evil. It's the lack of money that's the root of all evil.
I know that's right.
So, you know, we were blessed with the experience, you know, and I really wanted to stay. I almost brought a Brazilian wife home.
Oh.
They wouldn't let me. My partners wouldn't let me. Said that might be a mistake.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm wondering. I'm wondering now in terms of my present activity, present marriage, would that have actually been a mistake? I doubt it.
Might have saved you from something.
Might have saved me from some poverty. How about that?
I know how that goes.
Like my mama says, ain't no sense like bought sense. But we had a ball there. And actually, that's the thing that was inspired by Brazil. It's called Rio Sunset. And we just had a ball there. And really, I'm going to tell you something. One of the most talented musicians I've ever met in my life, outside of Terry Thomas that we're playing with now, albeit a little eccentric, you know, this is what genius does. It kind of makes it a little difficult to be around, if you understand what I'm saying. You know, basically, but spooky, very warm cat, very giving. Oh, man, I'm just telling you, you know, I look forward to just having time just to talk to him, let alone playing music with him. Everybody looked forward to playing with Spooky, including Don Wilkerson, the late Don Wilkerson, who we played with at Pizzazz, and, believe it or not, Arnett Cobb, who was another great Texas musician. Kurt Whelum would always come in. We have video of that, so hopefully we can get some of that on maybe a later show. We have some of those programs from Jazz at Pizzazz on video. Sound is excellent. But it's just that Spooky had a tendency to attract and challenge people. Now, when he got tired of playing keyboards, guess what he'd do? He'd go to saxophone. And we're talking about soprano, alto, what have you. And again, that genius, when it gets frustrated, it's one thing that happens. And I hate to say this, but I will. It goes to drugs. And, of course, you know,
a lot of people turn to drugs.
The biggest drug there is alcohol. Let me say that, too.
Mm-hmm. And it's legal, and you notice it's legal.
That's right. It generates a whole bunch of taxes and a whole bunch of revenue. And unfortunately, by him having been in the Navy, which also is kind of like a risk factor for
alcoholism, drinking. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Let me tell you something, man. It's a shame. I miss him to this day. I mean, it's not a week that I don't get up and miss Spooky because he was just that kind of cat. Wasn't no more than about 5 foot two.
So was he taken away because of alcohol?
Well, ultimately speaking, he was taken away because of alcohol and drugs, including, I'm just to say, in particular, cocaine, nasal cocaine.
And that's an unfortunate thing that a lot of artists in Houston and all over the world actually have met their demise due to drugs or alcohol.
Yeah, I think the tragedy of the whole thing is that the drugs are so ubiquitous. They're put actually on the street by the DEA, by the federal authorities in an effort to control the community. And it's not quite as widespread as alcohol. Again, you can't go to your local liquor store, but you best believe the same stuff they're taking and busting, they're putting right back on the street, selling, generating money. It's been well documented in newspapers across the country. And I think that's really the tragedy, that we need to kind of get the word out. For artists to stay alive, they need to be drug-free.
They need to be drug-free. And speaking of drugs, I got a question.
Yeah, also.
When you say Doc Pete, what does that doc stand for?
That doc is for MD. And certainly we have had, let's just say, our experience with, you know, practice. And we did predominantly, actually, had a big Hispanic practice in urgent care doing everything from ultrasounds to delivering babies before it got too expensive with malpractice insurance out on the north side.
First, so
5608 at Yale. I actually got to know quite a few artists that way, too, because we took care of quite a few artists.
Oh, is that right?
So I have an MD. That's what the doc stands for.
Wow.
And right now, let me just be complete with this. We're still fighting the
government.
Yes,
address the issue.
Issues. Excuse me?
Address the issue.
Which issue?
The doc MD.
Did you
go to
MD.
School? What
I'm
school?
Still an MD. Yeah, I went to St. Louis University.
Oh,
School
okay.
of Medicine. I went to University of Missouri, chemistry major and music minor, and came down here to Texas and went to the Texas Medical Center where I did a rotating internship and 2 years of family practice and then a year of fellowship, about a half a year of fellowship in family practice. Went to University of San Francisco to do emergency medicine and also University of Southern California. So to emergency medicine, just to kind of get that thing.
Wow!
I went to Parkland did OB up at Parkland, University of Texas, Dallas.
So Doc, tell us, what brought you to music? I mean, you actually started your own label. I mean, even recording your own music. What got you to following music with such a passion?
Well, first of all, music has never been apart from me. It's kind of amazing, even fighting the federal government right now with some issues dealing with my practice and pain management that we had, basically because of trade restrictions put on me by the DEA and some other issues. I'll get into that later. But, you know, music never has been a part of me. Since my dad first put that horn in my hand when I was 6 years old, this is 50 years later, never has been a part from me. The real issue is, how can I spread this music? How can we share this gift? How can we inspire other children to pick up their horns, to pick up their piano, to learn how to write songs? You know, how can we do this? Because this is $30 billion a year back in 1970 as far as the gross national product. We don't buy planes, et cetera, like maybe Aerosmith does. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But nevertheless, there's legitimate talent that exists in all aspects of the Hispanic, white, the black community that gets stifled. You know, there's so many children, if they could just have a horn put in their hand or just had access to keyboard lessons, you know what I mean?
No doubt.
I think a lot of that has had to do with generating rap. I surely can't knock that, because it really, when you stifled the instruments, what came out, it had to come out like a convulsion, like a fit, like, you know, something that had to come out controlled, you know, like a revolution. It had to come out in speaking forth from spoken word and then to rap. And I'm really a fan of the spoken word, period. I think words can be so powerful, and, you know, they can actually actualize and make things happen that weren't happening before. You know, that's why you had to be careful with your words. But still, I think I'm still a fan of spoken word. That's why we recorded rap. We were the first ones to record ladies in rap. I think we were before Salt and Pepper. Because I really heard what potential it is. Oh, yeah, by the way, I read an article in Spin magazine that also talked about the power of rap. That's really what got me into recording again, I guess that second phase, because now the first phase was just something to document, you know, the talent that I knew we were around. I'm saying, like, Walter Joseph, Willie Pickett, Kenny Abear, he's on the one on the flip side on that 45, it's called Adios, meaning not just like in the Spanish language, but if you break that down, I is two, Dios is God. So when you tell somebody, Adios, you're saying, to God be with you. You give
yes.
them a blessing. Let God be with you, to go with you, you know. And, of course, if they're saved, they believe Jesus was raised after the death for their sins, guess what? You don't have to even worry about that. That's a done deal, but I don't want to preach here today. But, you know, when you tell them Adios, so that's why we picked the name for that tune. But Kenny Abear was one of the most talented musicians also that I had the blessing of being with. You know, because here's what the cold part is. You got to get into the question, to, as Moon said earlier, address the issue. Listen, if you don't do it, if you don't record something, guess what? Who do you think will?
Nobody.
Right. If you have an idea, if you have something that you want to express, you know, think about this. We've got pictures of Emilio Zapata. We've got pictures of Pancho Villa. If somebody had not videotaped those great men, we wouldn't know. If nobody had interviewed them, for example.
True.
We would not even know.
They exist. That,
yeah, exactly. So it's the same thing for us. You know, like back in the day, this is the story we always heard. John Hammond was responsible for recording Count Basie, Aretha Franklin. You know, that's a big range there.
Mm-hmm.
Duke Ellington. Oh, it was Juan Tizol, okay, who's Hispanic, was a very integral part of Duke Ellington's band, okay? Matter of fact, he used to bump heads. I used to hear the story with one of the greatest bass players, okay? And I'm just saying all that to say that.
And we're talking about the jazz scene, right?
We're talking about the jazz scene. I'm jumping around a little bit. But you see, this music has been a combination of, like, you know, no trade restrictions. You know, I mean, people were coming from Cuba, you know, to make this music. They were coming from mm-hmm. Mexico. You know, I got a chance to play with, and I wish we had been in the studio, Mr. Zenteno. Okay?
Oh, Roberto Zenteno.
Roberto Zenteno, buddy. You talking about musician.
Yeah.
And I'm still madly in love with the music of of the son, the two sons that are still living. Okay,
yeah.
Roberto
Bobby,
Jr.,
yeah.
Bobby, and Javier, okay? But Norma, oh, my goodness.
His daughter, yeah,
I mean,
sure.
You know, but really, that's going to be my next big project. We're going to do, I've been trying to, you know, she's down with it. We're going to do it. We're going to do a salsa jazz album, which is the gospel lyric again and jazz music, because I can't wait.
Yeah.
We got a chance to play since I was here. I love the genius of Johnny Torres, for example, who can play just as well on keyboards as he could since I've been here in Texas. Been a very integral part of our recording keyboard and saxophone. He taught me one of them, my favorite tunes, Lazy Bird. You know, I never will forget. Johnny Pena, instrumental at kind of making the music scene go. We used to play like from 2 o'clock in the morning till 6. You hear me?
Good
this
God.
This is music, man. This is when you were on fire. I'm talking about
it was happening.
With the Zentenos. Everybody was up right up on the place over there called El Diablo, of all names, right up there on Richmond and Hazard. Okay?
Yeah, just the opposite guy that you want to see in the back alley, right?
That's what I'm talking about. But guess what? He didn't want to have no part of that because it was too much music going on.
I know that's right.
We were just on fire for, you know, what we thought we were supposed to do. And, yes, it took it to another level. We had international people coming in like Pharoah Saunders, you know, and some of the cats that really have made this music go further. You know, it just doesn't happen at HSPVA. Everybody can't go to HSPVA. Okay?
That's right. That's right.
You've got little kids that are going to schools that cannot afford instruments, and I can't say that enough. We
that's
need to
right.
be prepared, you know, and get out of ourselves. Get out of our buying, you know, whatever it is we buy, and think about helping our community with providing instruments,
for
providing
the
kids. Instruction. Exactly, because guess what? If we don't do it, guess what?
It goes away.
Nobody will.
The age of the dinosaur, that's right.
That's right. So the next alternative they have, of course, again, to show some love to themselves or what we think is love, there's a dope man standing
and get
right
caught
there.
Up
oh,
in
no,
it.
No,
yeah,
no,
get
no,
caught
no,
up
no.
in the game.
You see what I'm saying? That's how it rolls. I mean, this is, I hate to say, this is the game, this is the biggest game that got put on us since the Indians were first drinking fire water. You understand what I'm saying? Well, these drugs. And I'm telling y'all, it's time to stop. Stop it.
Sounds like justice.
It's time to start playing some music, start writing some spoken word and write some rap,
mm-hmm.
and express yourself that way. Show yourself some love and show your community some love. Put them drugs down. Put them 40s down. Put all that stuff down. It's time to stop, because guess what? If the same thing our kids see us doing, guess what they're going to do?
They're going to do the same thing.
They're going to do it.
Yep.
You know, but anyway, we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to get too much on the soapbox, I hope. But I just wanted to say that that's certainly, I grieve at some of the people that have gone on that way, you know, and that, you know, that's not taking the music any further, you know.
Okay.
It's really just putting a hole in the music. It's just like trying to patch up the hole in the boat. Okay, and it's a storm going on outside.
It's going on outside.
Yeah.
I'm interested in Doc because I'm interested in going to different places all over the world and doing shows and stuff. So I'm really interested in the tour life and touring with other people that I relate to. Do you have any interesting stories as far as touring or being in a different country and just, you know, jamming out and things of that nature?
Well, yeah, let me give you the story of going to Montreal. I'm up there in my three-piece suit. I'm at a medical convention, right? Man, those people treated me like dirt, you know. And I'm a pretty regular cat. I spoke a little French, too. All right? Parlez-vous français? Look here. But guess what? Put on my jeans and a regular white shirt, took my horn out. They treated me like a king.
Oh,
you
my
me?
Man.
They look, I wanted to stay in Montreal, trust me.
Now, after that, thing, yeah, right?
Let me flip it around. When I went to Rio, similar thing happened, you know. They were surprised that I knew their music. They were surprised that I knew, like, Girl from Ipanema, Desafinado, you know, some of those that
some
Antonio
of the big
Carlos
hits.
Jobim wrote, okay? He wrote them as part of, you know, kind of being influenced by Nascimento to a degree, who came here a couple times for the Houston Festival. But, you know, it was just a great thing.
Do you have some projects that you're currently working on right now?
Oh, yes, sir. We've got a ton of stuff we're working on right now. I'm working with Terry Thomas, who's, like I say, probably one of the most unrecognized geniuses ever in the history of Houston.
That's big to say.
We might not play the gig next week because we're not getting along, but still,
I would
say that without a shadow of a doubt. I love my brother. I have to just shout out to him and tell him that's what I mean, because he's gone from playing bass to keyboards now, and I mean he sounds. I mean he's, the way he pushes the music. I mean he's not afraid. See, this music is an artistry that requires a lot of practice.
Yep.
You can't just get out there and play it. Let me just mention this name, too. Louis Gasca is somebody who I need to mention, who, talking about playing from 2 and 4 in the morning. Louis used to bring all his girls in there and try to play a pimp. Now, Louis might be 5'2" if he put on platforms. But you talking about some trumpet playing? Okay. So we got a chance to record, too. We may have some of that on later, too. But I got a chance to record with Louis. I can't forget to talk about him. I also would like to just kind of think, going back in terms of the history. Houston, I could tell you, more than any city I had ever seen before, more than Dallas, does not support their artists.
You said
no
that.
No doubt.
You know, I don't know why. I think it has something to do with slavery. I can't really put a finger on it, but I think
somebody,
you know,
spiked the Kool-Aid man with hater juice.
Something happened, because if you take like a guy like Joe Medwick, who did really have a real problem with alcohol, who we fell out countless times too, but before we fell out, he gave me the whole history, and I have it on tape, of Duke and Peacock Records. I have it on video, audio files, and
nice.
In the process of doing that, we recorded songs. I collected royalties in excess of $30,000.
Wow, that's
not bad. Still collecting royalties for it. You hear me? For my half.
Wow.
Okay. Nice.
For my half. And I'm talking about, you know, I get a check every quarter from, that's one thing I want to tell you. Take care of your business, artists. It's a book called This Business of Music, More This Business of Music. It's written by two Jewish attorneys. Get the book. Go to the library. Get a library card. Get on the internet. Get that laptop for 2 hours.
Find out the information. Right. That's right.
You got to get the 411. This guy wrote this book that wrote Future Shock. Alvin Toffler wrote that it's right now. It used to be about brute force, power, and of course money, and then of course information. Now
right.
It's information.
Right, Doc. And so talking about information and taking care of your business as a musician, I hear there's a new contract, if you will, coming out, the 360.
Oh,
can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
I love that. I love it, because that's going to give, of course, with this money thing messed up in America like it is, I don't know to what extent that's going to influence things, but I'll tell you this. You and I can come together and form a corporation and do the 360 for each other. Like you say, if we don't, nobody will. We see talented artists, etc. My real feeling is that what they have done is the people who used to book the concerts were very interested in getting into the money of the artists. They didn't just want to record the people, and then boom, by contract they had to let it go. And it used to be against the law. It used to be a conflict of interest to do all that, do management and recording, okay? But they knew, like, you take like Madonna and Jay-Z are the ones that have basically signed these deals, and I think everybody else now is going to want to sign them.
Right.
Okay, because what you do, what that company does, that conglomerate does, is shares T-shirts, which never were shared before. An artist could just print up T-shirts and caps and do different things, and guess what? Sell it at the concert. But
and that's
anymore.
Their money.
That's right.
But now they want to get a piece of the
so
action.
They want a piece of the action. But what happens, here's the blessing. Like Jay-Z got $25 million on his deal. I don't know how much Madonna got. And she didn't do as much of a 360. She may have done like a 220. Okay?
Oh, yeah, but she's worth some serious
cash.
She's
big. She's already got her cash, and she married homeboy. Got
well,
Richie that has some
well,
cash.
She's
about ready to get a divorce.
She's paying, no, she paying him off already. Yeah.
She got to get with Alex Rodriguez now, huh?
Yeah,
that's right.
With Alex. I'm interested in, Doc, what do you feel, how do you feel as far as, like, let's take it back to, let's say, the 70s and the 80s, how, you know, you needed a deal to get heard on the radio. You needed distribution to get heard on the radio. Nowadays, you know, you don't need those things anymore. As far as an independent artist, you got downloads. You know, you got it's a total different beast.
Yeah, see, you got a different game. I think you hit the nail on the head.
Right.
There's so much money being hemorrhaged, though, mm-hmm. because of people stealing music. You know, it's just
that's true. You got to support your local artists.
See, what happens is that they'll record even they'll take Yolanda Adams and just like right in church and say, hey, I want a copy of that. Well, you didn't ask Yolanda whether it was okay, and you know
to use that. That's right.
You see what I'm saying? So all the things that went into her recording. Now that's the same thing that happens with an independent.
Right.
Which can kind of be kind of a killer, especially on a CD. That's why people are going more to the 360 deal, because you see the record companies know that the people are going to download. So therefore,
and there's
they
no
need
way
to
get
stop
another
it. Source
That's
of
right.
income. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. Right.
Yep.
So I think I support the 360, getting back to that.
And why do you support the 360? Is it because it gives the artist an opportunity to come out of artistry into other parts of the business world?
Absolutely. Well, see, Jay-Z has $25 million to deal with new artists. So, Moon, you may want to send some of your stuff to him. You see what I'm saying? He's with his girl.
Jay-Z's actually got some of my stuff. He was like, nah, I can't mess with this guy. He's going to try to take my girl.
Oh, I know, player. I understand. You know. He started hating on you.
And it's like, I was telling Jay-Z, I'm like, you know, we got that Houston connection and all that, you know. But he wasn't listening to it,
well,
man.
He didn't want
to
hear that, huh?
He did not want to hear it.
Well,
we got that in the jar
that,
studios over there, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Couldn't
yeah,
hang with that.
Slamming, for sure. What's that number? 447-1344-7 what?
2274. That's right.
Yes, sir. That's a blessing.
Get your recordings made at In the
right
Jar.
Here, I tell you,
that's
I've been
right.
blessed by y'all. I tell you, Al, you're a fantastic cat, man. I tell you, I just, you know, we just hit it off from the beginning. You got a beautiful spirit, and, you know, man, you've come through a lot with the death of your father, and you flipped that thing around, you know, going to school there over there at U of H, and it almost inspired me to want to go back to school, but I'm going to let you stay with the technical part.
All right, Doc.
I mean, I just appreciate you immensely. I just don't want to hesitate to shout that out to you.
We all got love for Al.
That's sure. He puts it on the water and gets it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I can't say enough either about, again, Joe Medwick, who really, I don't know if y'all heard about Duke and Peacock Records. They were one of the first, well, if not the first black big recorders. They were 20 years ahead of Motown. And see, most people don't know about Louis Robin. So I'm talking about Don Robey. Don Robey. Louis was his son that I worked with in medicine. But Don Robey, look here, man, if you want to get some history, pull up some stuff on the internet about him, because he took gospel music to another level too. Most people don't know. This is what Joe told me. Before Don Robey, you did not have gospel music with music. All you had was a cappella. Okay? So you got people that came out like Billy Preston, et cetera, who were playing in those sanctified churches, right? They were playing music behind there in their churches, right? So, excuse me, Don had the insight to start recording this, and that's why the gospel thing is like it is today. You take Ray Charles, Don Robey's name is not mentioned, but if you really look between the lines in that movie Ray, you'll see how much Houston had an influence of really producing Ray to the
to the level that he reached.
To the level he reached, exactly. and some of the things that happened to Ray while he was in Houston, you know.
What drew you to Houston?
What drew me to Houston? Ben Taub Hospital. Because, of course, I wanted to go to... I started to stay in Dallas. I really loved Dallas, but I would have had to do OB. I would not have been able to do my music if I had been in obstetrics, okay? At least not for the first 30 years until I retired.
And so what you're saying is you weren't willing to give that up.
No, no, I couldn't.
It was a part of you, right?
It's something that had to continue. And, yeah, I've paid a heavy price, you know, because I'm definitely unconventional. I'm off the hook. I'm not your best neighbor. I mean, seriously, I'm not the most neat person. You know, I'm trying to, I heard you say this earlier, I'm trying to let the Holy Spirit lead my life. That's the only way that I know I can make it, you know, with a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, because otherwise I'll mess it up. You hear me? But I have a love for Houston in that. I've had a lot of pain. I've run into a whole bunch of witches. But
oh,
that's
I
who I've attracted. That's who I've attracted. And, you know, hey, some of them have had babies from me, you know, but praise God, I'm still here behind two sets of voodoo. And, you know, I love the Lord now more because he's delivered me from that negativity. And,
yeah, that evil.
I used to do drugs. Hey,
voodoo.
Man, I used to love that powder. You hear me? And mellow light till it got heavy. But thank God for some steps that I took. 12 steps, and guess what?
Brought you up out of it.
Reading that word, man, I'm going to tell you something.
Brought you up out of it.
I'm telling you, and it can happen for anybody. If it happened for me, it can happen for you. If you want to call me, I'd be happy to talk to anybody that's interested in getting delivered away from that menace.
Where can people actually get copies of your recordings?
Oh, we can get them right out of In the Jar. Look here, he's got it on. I think he's still got it on the website. You can write us at P.O. Box 14089. We can make sure we get some CDs out to you.
Some good music.
Yeah. And
again, hey, Al, we got some more of their music?
Yeah, we'll put some on. We'll put some on, Doc, and
I
will be right back.
The hand of the Lord was upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me down in the middle of the valley, and it was full of bones. And he caused me to pass among them round about, and behold, there were very many on the surface of the valley, and lo, they were very dry. And he said to me, Son of man, can these bones live? I answered, O Lord God, thou knowest. He said to me, prophesy over these bones and say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord God to these bones, behold, I will cause breath to enter you that you may come to life. And I will put sinews on you, make flesh grow back on you, cover you with skin, and put breath in you, that you may come alive, and you will know that I am the Lord. So I prophesied, and I was commanded, and as I prophesied, there was a noise, and behold, a rattling, and the bones came together, bone to its bone. And I looked, and behold, some nails were on them. The flesh grew, and the skin covered them, but there was no breath in them. And he said to me, prophesy to the breath, prophecy, son of man, and say to the breath, thus saith the Lord God, come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe on these slain, that they come to life. So I prophesied as he commanded, and the breath came into them, and they came to life, and stood on their feet, an exceedingly great army. Then he said to me, son of man, these bones are the whole house. The whole house of Israel. Behold, they say, our bones are dried up, and our hope has perished. We are completely cut off. Therefore prophesy and say to them, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I will open your graves and cause you to come up out of your graves. My people.
That was Adios. Let people know about that record right there. What studio recorded that? Did you actually do the writing?
Yes, sir. That's my original. Actually, I have to kind of give credit to Kenny Hebert, too. Kenny Hebert and I kind of did that as a duo at first. We put the bass down and the drum beat down first. That's why I was so interested in finding out how you did that thing. But we put the bass and the drum down first.
Right, the rhythm
and
section.
And then I had an idea of what to do on flute, and Kenny Hebert put the chords to it. It goes something, you know, I know you just heard it, but it goes, it was a lot of articulation to the point where Hubert Laws had to ask who it was playing that song, you know, later on. You know, he's the guru on flute.
And he just had to know. He just had to know who that was on that track, right? I know, that's right.
He had to know, but really, Kenny Hebert's solo was just impeccable. You know, as you could hear, he was just a genius in rhythm and really playing outside and inside, but still making good music. And that's what I used to always like about Kenny. We did, in a ministerial sense, under the direction of Deloitte Parker, down at the Masiba Theater, we played, and we've got video on that. One day I want to get that on too, Al, for the liberation of Clarence Bradley when he was on death row for doing something that he didn't do, right?
Mm-hmm.
He finally got out, but it was through the efforts of a lot of people down at KPFT and, you know, some people that were just, you know, raising some sting. Hey, this shouldn't happen.
Yeah, and just doing the right thing.
There's too much evidence against, you know, against saying that he didn't do it. But anyway, we played for that thing, and that was probably one of the most, that was a highlight of my whole music career.
Mm-hmm.
Of being involved in getting that man out of and off of death row. You see what I'm saying?
Speaking of death row, I've got a question, kind of like a hip-hop question. I know you've got the MD, you're a very good jazz player, flute, and we've heard the music, and I like it. And I just got a question as far as, like, culture, hip-hop culture, because I sort of tend to think that Dr. Dre, whenever he put out the Chronic album with Snoop and all that, that was back in 91. You know, he kind of glorified smoking hemp, you know, listening to hip-hop music. You know, back in the 70s, it was acid. Back in the 80s, it was coke and stuff like that, and the disco. So, you know, Dre kind of put the hip-hop hemp scene into the game.
Right.
And then, you know, we're from Houston, so we're into the down south kind of thing. And, you know, Screw started screwing music up, and it was influenced by Promethazine. And mm-hmm. We've lost a lot of people because of that, such as Screw, and a lot more people, man. Talk about a little on how the culture of hip-hop, it's almost like drug-related.
Well, you know, I really appreciate you making that. That total correlation, because it's no doubt drugs are really not supposed to be outside of what the doctor prescribes,
mm-hmm.
what the doctor has, you know, monitors. As a matter of fact, that's what I'm going through with problems with respect to the federal government. They went ahead of the medical board even to try to influence some things. But back to your question, I think really this really is where things start. Your children are going to be under the influence of their peer group real soon,
mm-hmm.
if they're not already. So, you know, you have to spend time with them.
Yep.
If you're doing drugs, what do you think they're going to do?
And drugs.
I think the whole thing about
they're going to be stealing your drugs.
Exactly. Going right into your cabinet. They know, they watch you.
Yeah.
You know, whether you know it or not. Everything we do. So we need to be really kind of like even thinking about, you know, having a vegetarian meal one day a week, you know.
Yeah, because these kids are getting really fat nowadays, right?
Right. I mean, it goes all through, not just drugs, but getting back to the question, I think that, unfortunately, we have the DEA probably condoning certain artists to promote certain drugs, because guess what? This is supported wars, y'all.
We've got guys out there with CD covers, and they got videos, and they're glorifying that life,
right,
of drinking liquor and smoking
exactly.
bud.
And then they endorse a certain liquor, mm-hmm. and get their name put on it, mm-hmm. you know. All I'm saying is that they don't see, they see the front end of cash.
They see the money. They see the money.
The greenbacks.
Right. I want to get paid. I heard one of them even say it. They don't even care about what they talk about.
Exactly.
With that might have repercussions down the road. And again, I don't knock the music, but it's an art form. It's genocidal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? A person can be genocidal with the one and within one's own race. You know, Hitler was a Jew.
Right.
Most people don't know his granddad right. was a Jew. And, you know, if you've run history on that, so he was talking about exterminating the Jews for the benefit of the economy. You hear me? It didn't have nothing to do, and he was genocidal in himself. So I say that to say we do the same thing. We're out there selling, you know, et cetera, to get over so we can make it. Because mama say go make some money, especially around Christmas time, right?
That's right.
Keep your behind in school. Get something in your head. I know your teachers may not know what they're teaching sometimes, but guess what? You go to the library, learn how to read. Look here, do your reading, writing, and arithmetic. Mm-hmm. And not only that, make sure
you can get on. And that's right. Yeah. You can get on in life.
Yeah, and make something and have be a contribution instead of a parasite.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's really what the
instead
issue
of
is.
Being another number in the prison system.
That's what I'm talking about, because they waiting on you, buddy. They got they base the
it's a revolving door
beds on the sixth grade failures.
That's right.
Sixth grade failures.
And the only place you go onto there is the ground,
that's
six
right.
feet under.
That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So you know the government makes $35,000 I think a year for each inmate. Okay, that's how much they get paid.
Okay. That's some money,
by
man.
By taxpayers. Okay.
Right.
So again, they don't talk about that kind of tax money being wasted. So again, some of this can be averted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these guys could be out here working,
right.
Making a living for their families.
That's what I'm talking about. So
exactly.
I think it'd be a good idea to kind of instill that in our children. Start with you got nephews, you got cousins. I think it's a good idea to kind of like not glorify that. It's not just Drake. But Dre is the one glorifies on national scale because he getting paid by the government.
Yep.
You know, how much better can you control the people if they're under the influence? Think about it.
True.
You're not going to have to worry about anybody voting.
Yeah.
You know,
send those fools off to war.
That's what I'm saying. You know, start marching.
I wouldn't necessarily want to have a drunk Marine trying to shoot somebody while I'm behind him.
Well, you know, in the Vietnam War, let me tell you something. They got those guys strung out on purpose, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I had some partners of mine came back from Vietnam, and I couldn't understand why they were coming back. And it was the same thing with that movie, American Gangster, okay? It really paralleled. You know, they wanted to come back and say, I want to sell some drugs. They were ashamed to say it, but that's what they really wanted to do. They wanted to come back because they didn't have to worry about paying the price of being, you know, of it being against the law. They would come back, guess what, with all the cane, and then guess what, put it right back here on the streets.
I would say one memorable moment that you can honestly say, and you went home that night and was like, I finally made it. I finally made it. What night was that? What were you doing? What show? Who were you working with at that particular time? Any year that you just went home and laid in bed that night and was like, I finally made it.
Well, I tell you something. I got more out of playing for Tully Evans under his direction. But guess what? We had so much talent up there, man. It's no night that I could ever see in my life that I really made it. And that's what's so good about the music of jazz. You're constantly a student.
Ever growing.
You need to have 2-3 hours of practice under your belt every day to keep your instrument up, to keep, you know.
Your skills, your chops.
Exactly.
That's right.
So I respect your question, but I don't think I could really say there was one night unless I was under the influence of some drug.
Hmm.
And it was fooling me into thinking that I had made it, because
you see a lot of these jazz guys, man, and let me let these people know that, because I see a lot of jazz guys in these clubs, and that's all they got is their instrument. That's all they got.
True. It's true.
It's like they got the clothes on their back, they got their instrument, and they're going to do shows that night, Friday and Saturday night, you know, then they're going to get to New Orleans, and then they're going to spend a month down there, and then, you know, I'm going to try to get up to St. Louis and spend some time up there. I mean, that's all they got.
That's true. Well, that's called being hungry, you know,
yep.
And I think you mentioned that in your interview. It's a necessary part, and the whole thing really has to really go to the point of, you know, how much do you want this thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many different songs to learn, so many different ways you can improvise on them. And then, guess what? Take it to another level. So many different songs that people know that, guess what? They might want to hear a little gospel influence. That's really where my head is at now. So I've got I've got unlimited ways to go, and I'm just looking forward to
bringing them back to the basics.
Well, we really want to hear. I really want to hear Norma Centeno singing some things, you know, some salsa, gas, you know. I really want to hear that. I mean, I really want to hear, before I move on to the happy hunting ground, you know, some things that, you know, are different, you know, from the standpoint of gospel that are going to be positive, you know. Mm-hmm. I think I've participated in enough negative stuff. I used to play in a band that all we did was James Brown, you know, and some of the... Not that there's anything wrong with James Brown, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, in essence, some of the music that was that's influencing Bump, let's get some Bump on and some, you know, let's get our thing on here. But, you know, again, there's nothing wrong with that if you're talking about two people that are committed to each other, you know, that are going to stay together and, of course, raise a family. Hey, that's what it's about. That's guess what? That's how I got here, you know.
Right, right.
My parents loving me enough to stay together, you know.
Bring it on.
That's what I'm talking about. So, you know, let's just leave it like that. It's just something to kind of foster people staying together.
You got another track that you would love to share with us today?
Well, let's see. I think we could just, you know, just kind of leave it up to y'all to kind of put whatever y'all want.
That's cool. Yeah, let's do that.
Let me just leave it up to y'all to whatever, if you want to even close out on it.
Yeah, we'll be wrapping up the show right now with this tune by Doc Pete and the rest of the guys.
Thank you.